got to the garden party.
977-1070 is the phone number. We're going to be talking about taxes in this hour and saving money on taxes. David Murata joins us. He's the president of Murata Wealth Management. Of course, you read him in the business section of the daily newspaper every week in provocative and, I think, very insightful columns. As I think back to some of the things we've talked about in the past, I always come to the research that David's done, particularly on issues like Social Security, and it's just really remarkable. And it's information that you need to have. It's why I'm so glad that he joins us here on the program regularly. David Murata, welcome again, and thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
All righty, and we're going to get that taken care of right now. I think we've got the right button pushed. And so, in any event, I guess I'd like to start out with a tax overview before we get into why it's important for people to be saving money on taxes, and particularly post-haste. As we look at taxes right now, where are we current levels of taxation and where are we heading?
Yeah, currently the top marginal tax rate is at 35%. It's the lowest it's been since 1930. That's the good news.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news is the Bush tax cuts expire at the end of this year, and the top marginal rate goes from 35 back up to 39.5, and then with all the phase-outs that are going to be put in, maybe up beyond 40. The capital gains rate is going from 15 up to 20, possibly up to 25 if you're in the highest tax bracket. And all of these taxes are really a tax tsunami. The Bush tax cuts helped stimulate the economy, just like the Reagan and Kennedy tax cuts did. And tax increases are ineffective. If you raise the tax rate to 100%, you collect $0. So there's a point at which rising taxes have a negative effect on the amount you collect. And studies have shown that you can't collect much more than about 18 to 19% of gross domestic product, no matter how much you raise taxes.
Because what, the product will fall?
Yeah, all that happens is the economy begins to subside until you're only collecting about 18 or 19%. It's very difficult to try to collect more than that because rich people, who are the people who primarily own the businesses and are saving, investing, starting new ventures, they actually don't need the money. So if you don't let them keep most of it and do things that they want with it, they just won't make it in the first place. They're the ones who can take off at noon and go play golf, or they can work. And most of them actually are doing things not because they need it to live, but because they use that money in their charitable giving and elsewhere, and they think that's important enough. But if you take that opportunity away from them, then they just stop working.
Well, this is very interesting because I've had this conversation over the past couple of weeks from Tea Party events and just talking to people, even in my own household, about people who would really like to start a business and would like to jump in and get something going to augment their income. And I think to the very last person, everyone I talked to basically said we're too scared to do it right now, mainly because of regulations, but I guess ultimately because of taxes and how much it's going to cost them, and that they're just not willing to take the risk because the benefit is too small.
Yeah, we have entrepreneurship in America at about 5%. It's actually what makes America great, is that one in every 20 people is running a small business and is doing something. I think I've said this before, but small businesses are responsible for 120% of job growth, and large businesses responsible for negative 20% of job growth because they consolidate. And entrepreneurship is a difficult venture. You have to learn more about the tax code than you'd ever want to know. Mm. You have to learn more about regulations. But on the other hand, it is the way to wealth, or at least it has been historically. And it's the way to build real value, to build something that lasts beyond yourself, and to take more control of your destiny and your work.
You know, you referenced, David Murata, this issue of the government taking through taxes, more than 18% of GDP, and that's about as much as you can get away with. Now, we have people who are very well-schooled. I hesitate to call them intelligent, but we have people who certainly have studied all of these things. The studies that you reference and the facts and figures cannot be a secret. And yet we go forward with this confiscation of wealth in America and the demonization of the wealthy. Do you believe that the people who are putting the plan into place are ignorant? They don't believe it, or is there another agenda at play?
I just saw a fascinating study in which they took economic questions And they asked economic questions which have a right answer.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked them of different people, and they asked them of different people from different political spectrums. And it turns out the libertarians get the questions wrong about 15% of the time. The conservatives get them wrong about 17% of the mm-hmm. time. All the way up to the liberals and very liberals who get them wrong up to 68% of the time. And so I think even though there is a right answer, and any textbook question at UVA would be marked wrong, 68% of the people are not answering what they believe is true necessarily. They're answering what they wish is true. And good wishes don't change the truth. So so naive is probably the best way of saying it. Disingenuous is probably a stronger way of saying it. Maybe just deluded would be the strongest way of saying it. But I think they actually get the economics wrong. They believe the economics wrong because what they want to be true isn't true in the way the world works.
Well, this is, I think, ultimately what I'm getting at is what they want to be true. We could speculate about all of those things. But I mean, ultimately, aren't we looking at a situation where taking money from people and giving it to government is diminishing liberty of individuals?
Diminishing liberty of individuals. It's also diminishing even the status of the poor. It turns out if you let some people get rich, the poor share in that and get rich as well. So a rising tide lifts all boats. And when rich people make money, what can they do with it? They give it to charities, they spend it, they employ people so that they can do what their area of genius is, they can employ people to do other things that they don't want to do. And there's pretty much nothing they can do with it. If they just save and invest it in the bank, then it's available there for loaning out for venture capital. It brings the cost of money down.
David Murata is our guest, president of Murata Wealth Management. We're talking today about saving money on taxes. And the setup was why we need to be worried about it right now. And I think we made that point pretty well. When we get back, we're going to talk about some various options and also the morality of these options, which I thought it was an interesting point of view because certain people are concerned about that as well. That's all when The Shilling Show returns. And by the way, if you have a comment or a question, we have lines open at 977-1070. We welcome your calls, all points of view. Welcome here on The Shilling Show. We'll be back right after this.
I gave a girl a ride in the wagon. She crawled.
The finest hand-selected bumper music in the business here on The Shilling Show. Thanks so much for joining us weekdays from noon to 2. Nutrition for your mind now twice as delicious. And thanks to our fine sponsors like Equestor Solutions. Actually, Dean and Tara will be on the program. I think it's next week, and I'm looking forward to meeting them and getting more information. We appreciate their support of this program, as well as all of our sponsors and your support as members of the listening audience of the people that sponsor the program. It is a mutually beneficial relationship. David Murata is here with us, continuing our segment today on saving money on taxes. He's online at emurata.com. Of course, taxes, a hot button issue always. And it's so interesting that we live in a place where some people are clamoring for their taxes to be increased. I'm certainly not one of them, but there are several of them in this community. And they're going to get their wish, maybe not the tax they wanted, but they will get taxes increased coming up very soon. You referenced, David, that a dollar saved on your taxes is more valuable than a taxable dollar you earn from your salary. I'd never heard it put like that. And let's explain that to people.
A dollar in salary, you have to pay taxes if you're at the top marginal rate. The top marginal rate's around 45%. So a dollar that you earn is only worth about 55 cents that you get to keep and 45 cents you have to pay in taxes. But if you save a dollar on your taxes, it's worth a whole dollar and you get to spend that whole dollar. So saving taxes is better than earning taxes in your salary. And this particular tax technique that we're talking about today is worth whatever you pay in your Virginia taxes times 16 or 21 or 25%, it's difficult to find a guaranteed 20% return on your money. And yet with this technique, whatever you pay in your Virginia taxes, you can get back 20% of it, which is amazing. And if you pay a lot in Virginia taxes, that's a lot of money.
We need to tell people what this is because, you know, when I saw what you had written down, I was absolutely shocked that this was available. I knew of the overlying program, and the overlying program is the conservation easements. We have them here in Albemarle County, We're talking about the Virginia Land Preservation Tax Credits, and there's a secondary market for them. So let's talk first of all about what they are in case people don't know.
Yeah, to encourage land preservation in Virginia, the Virginia legislature has set aside $100 million for Virginia Land Preservation Tax Credits. And what that means is if a landowner decides that they never want to develop their land, developing the land might have been worth $1 million. Without the ability to develop the land, the land is worth $1 million less. If they donate those development rights to a conservation nonprofit, they can take $1 million tax write-off. But Virginia sweetens the pot. They put so that you get 40% of the value of the easement back as tax credits. Meaning if you give $1 million in development rights, you get $400,000 back in state tax credits. Now, these tax credits are not refundable, so you have to start using them forward in the next 10 years, and you have to try to figure out, well, how can I use $400,000 in tax credits? Well, most people can't use that many, so in 2002, the legislation was amended to allow the tax credits to be transferable, meaning if I have a dollar that I can take off on my taxes, I can sell it to you and you can take a dollar off on your taxes. Well, obviously, you wouldn't pay more than a dollar, and so I can't get a dollar for my dollar's worth of tax credits. It turns out I can just put it out on the open market. And the open market changes from somewhere between 75 cents it's worth and maybe 84 cents. So you can buy, right now, you can buy tax credits for about 75 cents on the dollar. Now, you won't be able to use them until next April when it comes time to pay your taxes. But you can buy all of the credits you'll need to pay your taxes, and then you have to have no Virginia tax withheld because you've already bought that privilege. And so you don't have to have it withheld throughout the year. You can buy them now. It's a guaranteed 25% return on whatever you buy in terms of tax credits if you're going to use them next April.
So is it advisable if people want to do this? I mean, does the price fluctuate as you get closer to tax time, or is it pretty stable from now or buying them next year just before you owe your taxes?
Yeah, great questions. Some of the brokers, so a broker is someone who looks for people who have credits and pairs them up with people like you and I who might want to buy credits. Mm-hmm. And some brokers do a fixed price throughout the year. It's generally a little bit higher. Other brokers let it fluctuate on the market. And currently, the market's about 75%. I bought Virginia tax credits last December, right before. You have to buy them before the end of the year. I bought them in December, right before the end of the year, and I paid 79 cents on the dollar. So I got a 21% return on my money from December when I had to write the check to April 15th when the check was actually due.
So the broker obviously is taking a cut somewhere in here as well, right?
Yeah, the brokers take a cut. It's generally about 4 to 6%. There's also a transfer fee that the state collects of about 5%. And so the person who's actually sellers might get 73 cents on the dollar. They might get 69 cents on the dollar. So they're getting, of their 400,000, they're getting, you know, almost 70% of it, somewhere around there. And that's a better than having unused tax credits. At least that's money that they can pocket.
Absolutely, it is. And it's a very fascinating concept. Now, I guess, is there any shortage of these? Is there any possibility that, you know, that all of a sudden the word gets out and people discover this? Because it sounds like a great, well-kept secret.
There is. First, Virginia puts a cap of $100 million. So they're saying, look, we'll only not collect $100 million of Virginia state tax to help support this easement program. And people who like the easement program say Virginia puts the least amount of money for credits like these of any of the states, but they also look at the result, and that is, I think it's about 6% of the land not currently owned by the federal government in Virginia is subject to these easements. So 6% of Virginia that's not owned by the federal government is currently under easements, and those are open spaces. Unlike the land use tax credits, these are open spaces that can never be developed.
Well, that in a way seems problematic because ultimately, someone's got to stop that. I mean, does the government ultimately have the right to say we're not going to build? Now it's 6%, then it's 12%, then it's 15%. I mean, have they looked down the line at this and said, where are we going to stop?
It's a great question. The easements are donated to a land conservation whose sole job it is to hold these easements and make sure the land never gets developed. So for conservationists, they like this program because this means we will never develop this land. So we can look like Shanghai and the rest of the country, but these lands will provide that there'll always be open spaces in the country. So conservationists like the aspect that these are permanent and not temporary and will never go away.
A friend of mine, Bob Hodes, who's a local attorney, said, you know, this is really nothing more than a private park being paid for by public funds, which the public cannot access. So, you know, I'm having a park in my yard. You're paying for it, but you can't visit it except with your eyes. Would you respond to that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, the detractors would say, why should we spend $100 million of tax money, tax revenue, if you will, that would have been collected otherwise? Maybe the best use of a piece of land is developing it. Mm-hmm. And if that's the best use it can be put for within the economy, why not go ahead and let it be developed? And other people look at it and say, look, we're spending $100 million and it's going toward non-development rights for land that would never be developed. So if you put in a golf course, an 18-hole golf course, you are not developing the land to its full potential. You might be able to get credits for that because now it's a big open space, but it's still a golf course, and it would have been a golf course anyway. It just sweetens the pot for the golf course developers to be able to donate the credits. So it's problematic on all sides, and for that reason, small government people say, why doesn't the government just stay out of it and let people donate the development rights to a conservation if that's what they want to do, but don't provide the incentives, the financial incentives, for them to pocket $400,000 in the process?
Yeah, it really does seem problematic, because one of the other points that you brought out in your writings on this was that, you know, this is shifting the tax burden perhaps on greater to commercial entities, but I think all of us are paying for it. Ultimately, if these are taxes that are not being collected, ultimately, every person is going to pay more somewhere.
Yeah, not only that, but find me a poor person who's ever used and bought Virginia land preservation tax credits to reduce their tax burden. Pretty much the minimum you'd want to buy in tax credits is a couple of $1,000s, and you have to, you know, you have to actually have made money before you're going to be able to have a couple of $1,000s. So it's true there are so many opportunities like this within the tax code that well-off folks are able to take advantage of, and the middle class or lower income taxpayer isn't going to go to a tax expert who's going to be able to vet these. So we mentioned before the first limit is $100 million of Virginia. The second one is they actually run out of tax credits by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. People have bought them all that are on the market. And so there is an advantage, at least in lining up how many you want now. Even if you're not going to pay for them until December, you can at least start the process of saying, yes, I'd like to do these. And just as an example, I'm going to take an example from, say, somebody who pays a lot in tax credits or in Virginia tax. If your income is $200,000 and your deductions are about $25,000, your taxable income will result in owing Virginia tax of about $10,000. If you buy even at 84 cents on the dollar, $10,000, you save $1,600. That's pretty good for signing a piece of paper and writing a check for $1,600. You know, and if you get them now, you save $2,500 and you save even more simply for signing a piece of paper, writing a check, and then taking it off on your taxes.
Sounds like a good use of time. Before we go to the break, and we're talking with David Murata, president of Murata Wealth Management, is this the sort of thing that we're going to see happening with carbon tax credits? We're talking about cap and trade coming. Is that going to be a market like this?
Yeah, carbon tax credits is a little more insidious than this.
Yeah.
In carbon tax credits, if you're a negative producer of carbon, you produce carbon credits, say if you're a golf course. And then you can sell those carbon credits on the open market. And since they're doing cap and trade, the cap part is the part that's the most damaging. Because if you cap the number of credits and the demand goes above the supply, the price goes up infinitely. It's sort of like imagining if we had calorie caps, where you could only eat so many calories. Well, if you need more calories than that, maybe you exercise a lot or you run a lot. If you need more calories than that, where are you going to buy the calories from? And if we cap the number of calories in the country, which is kind of human energy, if we cap the number of calories in the country, then what will you do when the population increases and the demand increases? Suddenly, all of us are going to have to start eating less than we need to, and we'll all become a little more anorexic.
977-1070 is the phone number, and this is what's coming, and this is why you need to be really aware of what's happening and try to stop it before it happens. We know we have a lost cause here in the 5th District, but you could actually change that come November. 977-1070, if you have questions or comments for David Marotta, we'd love to hear from you. Leon is standing by, and the Shilling Show returns after this. The phone number as we head into the final segment of the Shilling Show for today. David Marotta is our guest, and thank you so much for joining us here. News Radio 1070 WINA from noon to 2 on weekdays. We're talking about taxes today, and there was another interesting, this was really interesting because there were some opportunities for people to get kind of a bonus tax refund or tax credits through an organization called SOHO. And what is that all about?
Yes, SOHO is a great organization. They help people who are developing child care programs and things like that, and they make it so that they provide them with better materials and better training. And organizations like that, especially those that cater to poor families and poor children, have available to them tax credits that they can give in response to a donation. So if you donate money to them, first, you get 40% of it back as a Virginia tax credit. Mm-hmm. They're available to give those out. If you're in the top marginal federal tax bracket, you get another 35% deduction because of your deduction, and that totals to 75%. But because of the interaction between the two, you're not paying Virginia tax. It actually works out to about a 70% gain through the whole thing. And then they have a donor there who's already maxed out all of his credits, who's willing to gift you some money for your troubles and bring the net cost to you to zero. It's sort of interesting. I'd never heard something like this before. And because it's not the organization that's giving you the money, any individual can give any other individual up to $13,000 a year as a gift, and there's no gift taxes or anything else. And so they have an individual there who's just trying to help people who are trying to help the organization. And so the net cost is to you is zero. And that's kind of an amazing charity where you can give to them and it doesn't cost you anything, and they do some tremendously good work. And we may see more of those kinds of agreements and efforts because giving is one way to multiply your dollars. For every dollar you give, you don't have to pay your top marginal tax rate, and so everyone at the top marginal tax rate only costs them about 55 cents on the dollar to give. And then if you have an organization like SOHO where you can give to them and they can give you back tax credits, it actually only costs you 30 cents on the dollar. And then if you have an organization like this where someone's willing to give back to you as well, it can cost you nothing, and yet you can give to this organization.
We've got just about 2 minutes left here to wrap this up, but aren't there rumblings from with inside the federal government that they're getting ready to start clamping down or capping or eliminating a lot of this charitable deduction that's available now?
Yeah, there have been a couple of proposals to make it so the rich don't get a charitable deduction. The cry from this Congress is, why should charity cost the rich less than it costs everyone else? And the fact of the matter is because income and keeping it in their pocket costs them so much more. It's a cause and effect. Every charity I know who has done any analysis realizes that if they take away the charitable deduction, they will go under because they rely so much upon the generosity of people. And part of the generosity is the equation. Well, it will give this organization a dollar. If I try to put it in my pocket, I can only put 55 cents in my pocket, and that makes the incentive worthwhile to give.
So do we think that's going to happen, if you had to guess if that's going to get through some of this curtailment?
You know, this Congress continues to surprise me with the number of things they push through, but I don't think that one's going to make it. I think there's enough charities who say this is a really bad idea to have successfully turned this Congress from that idea.
But ultimately, I think with many of these things we've heard about, you know, they're floating a value-added tax, a national transaction tax, and all these ideas. The fact that someone's bringing it up leads me to believe that even if it doesn't make it this time, that perhaps it will sometime soon.
Sometimes I think they're throwing out the most outrageous ideas so that the things they're actually doing don't seem quite as outrageous.
They'll look reasonable, won't they?
That's right.
Yeah.
When in fact the things that they've already done are some of the most outrageous things that have ever been done.
Yeah, and there's more to come. David Morata, thank you so much for joining us today on The Shilling Show. Always a pleasure. Visit him online at emorata.com. We'll look forward to next time.
Thank you.